calling Dorothy Jane and Pizza from South. I'm so sorry that I missed your call, but if you'd leave your name and number, I would love to call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings. This is the automatically deleted husband, the man who committed his life to his wife, the man whose his wife committed her life to me. And as has been pointed out several times, I'm the one that's living it. When somebody makes a commitment and then doesn't live it, what's the term for that? But you see, again, my hope's not in my wife, but my hope's in the Lord. The Lord has shown tremendous mercy in my life. You know, I think back, there was a time up to the later 80s, and I felt that constant nagging. Am I going to just spend life alone because my interaction? You know, I wasn't the guy who was out on dates constantly. It just wasn't me. And one day I realized, or I would say the Lord inspired me, that if it was in his plan that I would end up with a lady, to call my wife, to be one with a lady, that she existed, she was walking the earth, and that when I got married, I'd pray for her constantly. So start now. So I think at least a year or two before I even met Dorothy Jane, I think, I was praying for her. Didn't know who she was. I do now. But you see, even though she's abandoned me, that prayer hasn't stopped. The prayer actually has increased in depth and significance, because my prayer for her is for her blessing. My prayer for her is for her blessing irrespective of what the circumstances have been in the last few years or will be in the coming years. I only seek her good because, following the Lord's model, I will never leave her or forsake her, and I'm not withholding my blessing to her to whatever degree I can. But especially to Jim Cross and my wife, I'm doing this again on video because I think there may be some things to be aware of. Again, starting with the trivial, I watched the video I did, George Endure to the End. This is from December 23rd of 2019, so a while back. And, you know, in it was the idea that we see in the Gospels when the Lord does say, you know, those who endure to the end will be saved. But the idea of enduring to the end, I think, really has sunk in with me. So irrespective of circumstances, I'm enduring. And I used the example of my walking the Greenway because, you know, I still remember that moment. I was building up to be able to walk the entire, 4.2 miles out and 4.2 miles back. You know, I was doing half of that, three quarters of that. And then one day I finally did it. And the fascinating thing is, at the end of the Greenway, there's a sign, literal sign that says, end of Greenway. And it's kind of like, you know, there was a humor in that. But there was the idea that now that I got to this extreme, I got to go back. It's kind of like when we've taken hikes and we get to a long way away, you know, especially if we get to the top of Big Frog Mountain. Now I get back, got it back to the bottom. And, you know, so it's an interesting, plays with your mind. But I talked then in 2019, December 2019, that I had reached the point of 4 2/3 miles an hour. My best time is now only 4.7. So I've increased a little bit, but I'm at the point where there's kind of a threshold where you have to really switch from just fast walking to kind of a race walking mode. And I haven't quite done that yet. And of course, there's the reason. Why do you do that? Which is one of the things I discussed with him. But In thinking about why you do things, one of the things I think it's important that I want to encourage George on, and of course my other kids, is you know, and I think it's maybe more important for a guy than a girl. Yes, that's sexist and that's politically incorrect to say, but I think it's more important for a guy than a girl to have a goal, a goal that you may think is hard or perhaps even beyond you. So, you know, obviously the example of my walking, I've set goals. And I've basically blown past them all, except I haven't done the 5 miles an hour yet on the Greenway. Other thing is, you know, I set a long-term goal over a period of 5 years to do 1 million jumping jacks. And I've got, I think I just checked today, like 65,000 behind me. So I made a dent. But, you know, I have to do about 550 a day in order to make that goal. And that's quite easy now. But I wanted to, because obviously I didn't make my call yesterday, I wanted to have something a little further reach. Because I start my mornings with doing 256 continuous jumping jacks. And it's hard. About a month ago, I said, okay, I got to do better. So I think like three times now, instead of doing 256 to start my morning, I do 512. That's harder. But I found I can do it. And I realized, okay, this is going to be ridiculous. But so yesterday, instead of doing 256 or 512, I started the morning doing 1,024 consecutive jumping jacks. And when I was done, I was rather sweaty. And it was hard. It was hard. But see, there's a joy. I set a goal. And I did it. Oh, many, many months ago, I set a goal of saying, okay, one day I'm going to do 2,000 jumping jacks in one day. Well, you know, when you start the day with 1,024, 2,000 is an easy reach. So yesterday, I did 3,000 jumping jacks over the day. And yeah, that was a bit of work. And I'm grateful because I, you know, set that goal, did the strive to meet it. But, and then of course there's that long-term goal, because the long-term goal of doing 1 million jumping jacks, I can't speed that up per se. Well, I shouldn't. The objective is to do it continuously day by day by day by day for 5 years. The reality is, my goal is to do 1 million just because of the number, getting to 1 million. But my real objective is to do 500 plus jumping jacks a day for the rest of my life. Simply because I think it's very good for me health-wise. Gets me breathing, you know, a little bit. Helps because I'm on my toes as I do it, because I do it barefoot inside. And the thing that really fascinates me is my wife will know that I've had weak arms, but my left arm is now stronger than what my right arm was. My right arm, I mean, I'm almost like, almost to the point of normal man. You know, it's really changed my arms doing jumping jacks, which I found fascinating. But see, it's that continual effort, the enduring to the end, that I want to encourage my kids to do. But there's other goals, and I've thought about it, and there's really two that are huge that I desire to have to say that I've done, you know, sometime between now and my last breath. One is technical. It's the Shofar Book Project. I want to do that. For a variety of reasons, but in my mind, I'll be public about it. The request I have to the Lord, my prayer is that I would do Shofar Book. It's given away free, and it allows anybody to duplicate this and to take a tablet or cell phone or whatnot, turns off the communications. So it basically it becomes a standalone computer, but it does not communicate. And it puts on it the Bible, the Quran, and other things, hopefully in multiple languages by that time. But it doesn't communicate. It keeps no records. Purpose behind that is, in some places, if you have something like that, it could be fatal. So in order to reduce the exposure of somebody, no communications, no records. So somebody, if they find the device, there's no records of who used it, when it was used, or anything of that nature. So that's the objective. And the hope is that in the Lord's grace, and this may be happen, like I say, if it happens after I'm dead, fine. But I just want to do this. I would like to get it into the hand of a Muslim who actually goes to the Hajj, then sees this and is able to see the contrast between the Bible and the Quran. And I would like to get, it's not necessary, but I would like to also have the tools that it's easy to reference between the two. How that will be done, well that will take time. I have a desire to do this. And, you know, if one person does that and they say, oh yes, the prophet Jesus is actually the Lord Jesus. And if the Lord were to use my work in that scenario for somebody, that's my goal. That would be my joy. That's my intent. That is of the two primary goals, that's one of them. The other one is a little bit more significant. I want to reconcile with my wife. Obviously, this should be no surprise. I want to be able to look at my wife, see my wife looking back at me in mutual love. I want this desperately. From what I'm seeing from my wife, she doesn't want it at all. But my hope is in the Lord, not my wife. You know, so yesterday was our 31st anniversary. And obviously, I did send a happy anniversary, both the card and the a text to my wife, and clearly nothing. I did my jumping jacks and things of that nature. But the other thing that happened is my friend Chris said, oh, it's your anniversary? I'll be there. We'll take a hike and go out to eat. I mean, he does this. That's what friends do. But he also then, early in the morning, said, You want to move some bricks with me? Because his mom had a brick patio on the back of her house, and she was going to have somebody put in a screened-in porch instead. So these are just a bunch of bricks laid in out in the back, and it's kind of like, yeah, obviously, you know, it was an intense joy for me that he would ask me to do something, you know, with him for his mom. So he and I, and we did end up with a couple others, but he and I did the bulk of it. We moved 900 bricks, and so we were attempting to be a blessing to his mom, and that was a joy. To be asked to do that was an intense joy. So that's how I celebrated my anniversary. There was another way I would have preferred, but then again, it would require that mutual love. So, long intro. What I see, you know, I think back at conversations with Jim Cross, or what I've heard about Jim Cross, because, you know, for example, obviously, I vaguely recall an incident where, and my recollection is Jim Cross spoke positively about Bill Gates funding some education systems that allowed somebody, it may have been Caleb, it may have been somebody else, to get some, you know, scholarship or whatever at local college or something like that. And, you know, I remember the positive things. I also remember sitting in the office, a guy I was working with. He was kind of the next level up. And management, and in his office, I mentioned this before, he had a picture of him on stage shaking hands with Bill Gates. So I saw that while I was there on the 2-3 weeks I worked for Microsoft. And that was one of the things in my mind. I said, no, I can't do this. because there's a cultural problem in that area. There's a cultural problem within the organization, and that was an example of it, because what I saw there was people worship movie stars, singers, or things of the nature. There's a worship of Bill Gates within the Microsoft community. And it's kind of like, no, I don't want to be around that. And there's, you know, the other factor of he's simply a eugenicist. He and Melinda Gates, you know, because I've made the comment and I stand by it. Melinda Gates made the public statement that as we get the vaccines developed, we need to get it to the black community first. It's not an act of love or an act of, oh, we need to, you know, kind of help them out because of history and things of that nature. No, it's eugenics. It is eugenics. Bill Gates has gone to India and Africa. I said South America once. It's Africa. He's gone to India and Africa personally. And for, you know, PR reasons. He's been at places where he would give vaccines to kids. And you will see where those things happened. A huge amount of birth defects, death, lots of tragedies, and the reproduction rate dropped significantly. So a lot of places, they don't want him anymore. Because he comes in with his smiley face and deep pockets to kill. It is eugenics. It's just overwhelming. And what I find fascinating, obviously, apparently the issue of his divorce and whatnot, what has been said is that because of his relation with Jeffrey Epstein, that was the trigger point. And, you know, that's what's said. I'm sure that was known beforehand. So I think there's a lot of embellishment going on around here, around that issue. But, you know, he was in the limelight a lot for a long time about the importance of getting vaccines, and we're being helpful, and, you know, we're funding the Gavi and Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and this, that, and the World Health Organization. I mean, he was or is still the number one funder of the World Health Organization. Why would you fund an organization like that? Eugenics, simply. That's what it is. So, you know, you see that. It's right there in front of you. And you see, when I was there at Microsoft, you know, I had a starting salary of 120. And this is, you know, what, 15 years ago. I think in that culture, I could have easily, you know, because I've had proposals, you know, going to the 200K realm with Amazon and so forth. Neither one of those people I'd work for, not a chance. But I'm sure I could. But that culture, I'm sorry. The reason he gives money to the education is not because of education, it's for indoctrination. I mean, evidence is overwhelming, but the reason, you know, the whole purpose behind, you know, again, the AMA is designed to keep people sick. It's designed to keep the medical industry going profitably, and you need sick people. You don't need healthy people. People like me, I'm an anathema. They don't want people like me because I do things to keep myself healthy. Can't have that. You got to say, no, no, no. We'll give you vaccines, we'll give you pills and whatnot, and then go eat your garbage food, and we'll take care of you. And then you have all the insurance, because we need health care. We need state health care and whatnot. It's absolute garbage. It is absolute garbage. And this is the environment my kids are going into, and this is, you know, one of the things I desperately want to keep them away. For example, I'm going to get long. I'm sorry. You know, I've been very strong on the mask issue because I will stand with the masks are the armbands of about 100 years ago. Same thing, because it's showing allegiance. That's what it's for, because they provide absolutely no protection for you in spreading or preventing you from getting a flu. It doesn't work at all. You have a dozen plus controlled randomized studies show no effect. The only reason it's promoted is to get you to submit to authorities, to submit to the technocracy, to the state. That's the point behind this. It has nothing to do with keeping you healthy, not a bit. And what you see, because I've seen people, and this one that I saw that was really heart-wrenching, a guy did a video of a whole bunch of pictures of young kids being socially distanced, wearing masks and whatnot. It's child abuse. It is child abuse. Not only does it hurt their health, because one of the ways, you know, it's a distortion of the language. You know, it's like when somebody says, all right, we have an institution and we have to do things to continue to show our institution is necessary and we need to be strong, get people rallying around it. So, you know, there are a couple words that you will see over the years were used to twist the meaning of things in order to get people to follow a particular way. One is the idea, you know, the pair of words, where you equate freedom and democracy. Freedom and democracy are opposites, because anyone in the minority in a democracy is not free. It's just that simple. Freedom and democracy are opposites. And of course, the other one is you have a word that means the called out, an assembly of people. And you are, for example, let's say the Roman Catholic Church. So what you do first, for literally centuries, you keep the word, the Greek word, ekklesia, away from people, because you keep the Bible away from people. You say it's not right for the lay people to have a Bible. And they did that for literally centuries. And then you had people come in and sort of reprint them or, you know, reproduce them and then translate them into local languages. And horror. And they literally went and killed them. You know, the notable one was Wycliffe, who was killed by the British government, I believe. But, you know, the early translations took ecclesia and they called it assembly or congregation. But later, starting with, I think, the Bishop's Bible, and then, of course, specifically in King James, used the word church. Again, because what you do is you're changing the meaning. Because church, indeed, the third English definition is the people. The second is the building. The first is the institution. So you can say, oh, yeah, it's you know, again, it's the idea, if you translate a word from one language to another and then translate it back and you don't get the same word, you got a problem. And, you know, if you go to church and go back to you know, using the primary meaning, go back to Greek, you're not going to end up with ekklesia, because that's not what it is. So what you've done is you've put, by controlling the language, you gave power to your institution. You know, I've been through this before, but the other example of this is, you know, that more recently is the idea of herd immunity. Herd immunity has been discussed for ages. I mean, I think, I know decades and decades, and I think centuries. The idea that when a large percentage of the population gets an immunity to whatever disease, it protects the entire population. Rationale we'll go into. But the point is, it is because people have been exposed and their natural immune system, the one that God developed for us as his gift to us, takes over and says, ah, I recognize this now. And so when this disease comes, I am prepared to fight it. That's why we had the things like the measles and the chickenpox parties and so forth, you know, decades ago. So when somebody in the neighborhood gets it, all the kids get it, and then you have immunity. Then you have herd immunity. But what they've done, and literally changed it in the dictionary, Herd immunity is when a certain percentage of people get the vaccine. Complete twist of the language. It's like going from assembly to church for the meaning of ecclesia. You've twisted the language to give power to the institution. It's deception. Same thing. It's the same deception. And I'm concerned about this because this is fairly new. This happened in the last year. 5 years from now, I think it'll be just ingrained, like the word church is ingrained. So I'm concerned. I'm concerned because what's happening, because my wife did admit she has put masks on our kids. How often and so forth, I don't know. It's child abuse. Unequivocally, that's child abuse. There's another form of child abuse. You know, there's this book. Oh, what's it again called? The Bible, and it has various books within the overall book. You know, such as the second one being Exodus, and then split up in chapters. Chapter 20 has particular things. Split up into verses, like the verse that says, "Honor your father and mother." So what happens when somebody says, all right, here's this group of 9 kids, and the Lord's command, and we believe, we call Jesus our Redeemer, and we follow Christ, and the Lord says, honor your father and mother, but we're going to say not this father. We're going to say that we have a better interpretation. That first part of those commandments about you shall have no other God before me. No, we're going to actually use the state. We're going to use the institutional church. And we're going to use our own authority. Because God didn't mean that he's the ultimate authority in that first part of that chapter, did he? Or did he? What would it be like to look at the direct words of Christ and say, I'm not sure about that. I think I'm going to supersede the Lord. What would that be like? Would it be loving? I don't think so. It would be like saying, look at the model of Bill Gates. He's got lots of money. He's doing software. That must be a good thing. So this girl, marries this guy who does software. And he can make a lot of money. He's demonstrated that. And if he doesn't make a lot of money, he must be bad. We must abandon him. You know, the idea that you make the promise for richer or poorer, sickness or health, till death do you part. You know, again, that's the Book of Common Prayer. It's not the Bible. But it was a promise. It was a commitment. You lied, didn't you? You simply lied. Now, you put masks on the kids, which is child abuse. You tell them you can't honor your dad. And you isolate them. And then you say, okay, Jesus is a redeemer. And I'm going to teach my kids about the Lord. The way I'm going to teach my kids about the Lord is I'm going to show them that no, you don't have to submit to him. Marriage is temporary. The state is your Lord, and that all you have to do is go to the institution, maybe throw a few bucks in the plate once in a while, and you're good. And we see how well Eric Lee's embraced that. We see how well Jack's embraced that. You know, I'm guessing Tirza is probably somewhere in that mix. I don't know. And obviously, I don't know what's happened with Julia. So, but you got 5 more. You're sending them down the same path? Again, that's child abuse. I'm sorry, those are strong words. But that's the reality. That's child abuse. What can you do about it? First Corinthians 7:11, a wife should reconcile with her husband. Maybe that would be a good start. You know, If your brother has something against you, first be reconciled with your brother in Matthew 5. Maybe that's a good start. Maybe pulling down the walls that isolate my wife and me, my kids and me, my father-in-law and me, maybe pulling down those walls would be a good idea. Well, my wife did go to try to put the stake between us on Monday. And, you know, obviously I've heard nothing. I did have a joyful time with my friend Chris yesterday, and we talked. You know, because if you recall, and the evidence is there, I said that many months ago, we went to first hike Big Frog Mountain and then come to North Carolina. The Big Frog Mountain hike got delayed and delayed and delayed, and it happened. You know, I was at the top of Big Frog Mountain doing jumpy jacks. That's done. One of the things off the list. And the thing that was supposed to happen after that is to show up in North Carolina. The ideal solution, the ideal proposal, was to meet my kids alone. The suggestion was Grimes Park. Because I don't think meeting my wife would be worthwhile until she decides that she wants to live the commitment she made, that she finds some reason to say, yeah, I want to follow Christ in obedience to him. I will follow the model in Titus and Peter about what a wife's supposed to do. Same thing in Ephesians 5 and so forth. And I will love my husband and acknowledge that when she put the stake between us, it didn't mean a thing. If she puts the stake between us, your Lord is a state, not Jesus Christ. So if your Lord is a state, saying Jesus is a redeemer means nothing. It's a fallacy. It's a deception. But we did the Big Frog, so the next thing was to show up. So I propose again. I want to meet my kids. I want to see my kids. And I think the best thing to do is to see them at Grimes Park. Considering I have no idea the results of what happened Monday. So while I have no idea, maybe I'll show up. If it was denied, which is what my petition was, then if I can't show up at Grimes Park and see my kids, I'll show up at Seven Oaks. I'll be polite. I won't cross the property line. But I'll show up on Seven Oaks. That's a possibility. And, you know, if you did get something, then of course we'll see what it says. But even if you got something and they say, okay, if I show up, you call the police and they come take me away. Again, I won't be there alone. I will make sure we have multiple cameras running. So it'll be available for our kids in years to come to see that the mom who's claiming Jesus is the Redeemer doesn't live like it. The father-in-law who wrote me and said, yes, I want to reconcile with you, doesn't know about follow through. I did send him the card, you know, talking about, when Jesus gave the example of the two sons. One said, yes, I will, and didn't. One said, yes, no, I won't, and did. Jim Cross said, yes, I will, and he doesn't. He has no follow through, no stamina, no love. And there may be a possibility that he talked with his daughter, my wife, and she said, don't reconcile with him. So who's his God? Is Dorothy Jane his Redeemer? The other piece of news is I ran out of DVDs, as I mentioned. So I needed to get some more. And I thought, okay, when I send the DVDs as they are, they just look like, you know, because I handwrite something on them. Tomorrow, I have the delivery notice. They should arrive tomorrow. A stack of 100 DVDs printed. Maybe I can... I don't know if I have it. Well, anyway, there's a verse that's quoted on it from Galatians. Have I become your enemy by telling you the truth? I decided to put that verse on there because I wanted it to sink in. I want my family to know, and I want Jim Cross to know, my wife, my kids specifically, and anybody else to see that. To see, here's a man striving to proclaim Christ. Not using a verse and saying, okay, this is what it kind of means, so we're going to run with what it kind of means, like Jim Cross does. But examine in detail. You know, and again, when my wife did that, she quoted the Acts thing, and it's kind of like she quoted something she doesn't live. She quoted something she doesn't live. And she thought that was encouragement? No. Sorry. Encouragement is to show love. Jim Cross, I'm sorry. You don't show love. My wife, I'm sorry. You don't show love. If you don't show love, don't talk about your relationship to Christ. Because Christ, 1 John, calls you a liar. If you can't show love, you're a liar. You have no hope. Although, there is this idea of repentance. And it's my hope for Jim Cross and my wife especially, because I'm biased. But my assumption is, you know, when we read about in 2 Timothy about hearts turning cold, I'm dealing with stone cold hearts in Jim Cross and unfortunately my wife. But especially considering the kids that are still with my wife, George, Susanna, Glory Jane, Walter, and Zadok, I'm going to do what I can to punch through. I'm going to do what I can because, you know, I use the example of, you know, oh, I'm getting so long. One of the things I find so fascinating is the events that are happening in the country of Israel, mostly in Gaza. Because you have one group, Hamas, that's firing rockets into the rest of the country of Israel. And they're saying, oh, look, terrorists. What is Hamas? Hamas is controlled opposition. You know, you have Hamas, you had the PLO, I don't know what happened, and you have the Palestinian Authority, and there's probably other groups. Hamas does not represent the Palestinians, it represents some of them. But where do they get their resources and whatnot? A lot of it comes from the country of Israel. It's controlled opposition. It was set up, again, as I pointed out, the CIA and whatnot built up ISIS in order to have a tool to say, now we have an enemy out there that we can control, and this gives us somebody to fight, even though we support them. But it gives us, you know, this way we can grandstand to our own people, that tell our people that they need us. You know, it's the same thing. It goes back to the idea of the armband, is the mask or the armband of 100 years ago, because it's the same techniques. You know, the false flags, the Operation Himmler that Hitler used. That's what ISIS is. And then, of course, you know, it's interesting. See, I'm really troubled. Well, okay, on Hamas. What I find it fascinating is I've heard some Jewish spokesmen say, why don't they vote him out? Why don't the people in Gaza say, no, we don't want these people? Reason being, the country of Israel has prevented a vote from happening in Gaza. It's kind of like, why don't you vote him out? We're not going to let you vote, but why don't you vote him out? It's kind of like, because it's grandstanding. Anyway. The one thing I found also delightful is that, you know, because they're using the armaments. They need some more. So a ship was supposed to be loaded in Italy to get a bunch of more armaments to go to Israel so they can go kill more Palestinians. The dock workers said no. They said, no, we're not going to load that ship. That took courage. That was willing to say, perhaps even my job's on the line, but I'm not going to be involved in killing. Is that why I left? Well, anyway, we won't go into that. I find that fascinating. But, and I'm really troubled again with the Christian Zionists, because Zionism is horrendous. It has nothing to do with Christianity. And the country of Israel has nothing to do with the Bible. I won't go into that again. But again, by having that seated in people's minds, if you say anything against Zionism, there was the like a CPAC thing the Jewish PAC committee thing in the U.S. They had a meeting and they had people like. I think it was Mike, we lie, we cheat, we steal Pompeo. Because remember, that's his words. We lie, we cheat, we steal. And as he was Secretary of State speaking before this, I think it was the Jewish audience saying, anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. And it's kind of like, that's stupid. It's really stupid. You're trying to gain political power by doing that. It's deception. Because being anti-Semitic, it means also you're against the Arabs, not just the Jews. And Zionism and being Jewish, two different things. And there's a whole bunch of the Jewish community that'll tell you that. But anyway, my kids are being set up to be Christian Zionists, probably. They're probably being set up to trust in the state. Trust in the state with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge it. And it'll keep a boot stamping on a human face forever. Proverbs 1984. That's what they're being trained for. The idea of honor your father and mother. No. To see a mom, a wife, live in obedience to Titus, to Peter, to Ephesians and whatnot. No, we don't want to do that. We trust the state. We want to be condemned to hell because we're going to reject Christ because we trust the state, because our hope is in the state, right? My trust is in the Lord. The Lord Jesus Christ, the creator who stepped into his creation, not Santa Christ, the Lord Jesus Christ. And I'm going to proclaim this to my kids. DVDs of this. I'm doing this in video because this will be on DVD tomorrow morning and in the mail. And it will continue and continue and continue, just like my stack of postcards. I still have a lot left. I'm going to continue calling the police to intimidate me like Medivh has done, turning to the state to protect you like Jim Cross and my wife has done, showing a cold heart towards me like you all have done, is not going to stop me. You're going to have to put me in the grave to stop me. I'm going to continue in obedience to Christ to pursue reconciliation. And I want my kids to know that. I want the world to know that. This man is a follower of Christ. This man has read 1 Corinthians 13 about what it is to love. I've made the comment. We used to have that little artwork of 1 Corinthians 13. It was in our bedroom. Later moved to the bathroom above the toilet, and my guess is it was flushed down the toilet, wasn't it? No. There's the idea, I think the ESV is no record of wrongs and whatnot, because the objective is reconciliation without retribution. Who has said that? I'm going to pursue reconciliation. I'm going to call you out publicly. Again, the Galatians 2 model is calling you out publicly. And that's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to hope for, request that the 2 Peter 3 will be lived out, where there's a mutual calling each other our beloved brother. And you are acting as hateful enemies toward me. You're acting like the people who are bombing residents, neighborhoods, bombing multi-story buildings full of families, killing a couple hundred people in Gaza. You're acting no different than that towards me. And I've read Matthew 5:44. I'm going to respond in love. I'm going to call you out as what you're doing is hateful and cowardly and unloving, and reach my hand to you seeking reconciliation. No retribution here. Can you imagine what it'll be like? Any one of us reconciled. And that's why I'm going to try to punch through to get to one of my kids. Because if I get to one of my kids, your house of cards will start to fall. And it'll either fall and a wonderful blessing of a relationship will bloom, or that house of cards is going to crush you. And it probably won't be cards. It'll be like the bricks I moved yesterday. It's going to hurt. It's the Deuteronomy thing. I said before you, blessing or cursing. Choose life.